Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. It's just Rick and I today. Tony is on the road. So Rick, we've got some fun stuff to share. Let's jump right into a good one. So our friend Dave Portnoy, he's a half Bitcoiner, I would say at this point. He takes as a major insult after Coin Corner sends him a Bitcoin children's book because he struggles with Bitcoin. Let's watch this video.
So I'm in the New York office, first time in a long time, and I'm just going through gifts and shit that people have sent me. Maybe the most humiliating thing is people from the Island of Man, I don't even know if that's a real thing, I thought it was only for Bond movies, sent me a book. They're like, we know you struggled with Bitcoin. They're dead serious. Bitcoin explained like I'm five, like a two-year-old. Like it goes up over time. How about you take your little fucking Bitcoin kids book and shut up, your fucking asshole? Talk to me like I'm 2 years old.
All righty, Rick. The funny thing is this guy, I mean, he has earned this book. That's the funny thing. Like, he clearly doesn't understand it. And so maybe starting from the ground level would be a productive exercise for him, but he doesn't seem to think so. What are your reactions?
I'm pretty envious of Coin Corner, because that's a really genius marketing move, right? Like, really, really slick. I know a few of the guys over at Coin Corner. They're a really great bunch of people. If I had to guess, their head of marketing over there is Molly, and she's got a really good sense of humor. So this I think might have been Molly's brainchild, but it's a stroke of genius. It's quite funny that he gets upset. I mean, let's not forget, like, Dave Portnoy is a bit of a character, right? Like, he's an entertainer more than anything else. And yeah, like you said, I think he's earned that book, because I don't know if you've ever seen like the crazy clips of him, like, buying it, losing money, selling it, and just tearing his hair out and screaming at his laptop because he can't get a trade right. And look, you know, we can joke about it, right? But like Dave Portnoy, right, I think the risk is it's easy to think that maybe he's an idiot, right? Because his takes on Bitcoin are spectacularly bad. But, you know, credit to the guy. I think about what Dave Portnoy is meant to be, and that is an entertainer. And he's an incredibly talented entertainer, right? There's no question about that. So, you know, how much of his Bitcoin antics are genuine and how much is for show, you know, and to get the clicks and to get the entertainment value, I don't really know. But certainly, if you're trading Bitcoin to try and get more dollars, that does kind of suggest a deep misunderstanding of what Bitcoin is. And hey, listen, you know, Danny Scott, he's been around in Bitcoin a long time, so I don't doubt that book actually has some genuine value to it, right? It might explain things simply, but maybe that's a good thing. So I don't know. The only thing to say is don't copy Dave Portnoy's strategy, otherwise you might get sent this book as well.
Yeah, he like making the video was him being a good entertainer. I wouldn't be surprised if he reads the thing. I mean, I assume it's a short read. I haven't read it. I've graduated to real books without pictures, but you know, he could benefit if he just dove in, learned it as a 5 year old. I think Dave would be better off. Although he'd have less content to share on Bitcoin that would keep people amused. Alrighty, let's talk about Donald Trump's inauguration, including a crypto ball. Not a Bitcoin ball. So for all the people who are saying that we have our first Bitcoin president of the United States, let's be clear, we have our first crypto president of the United States. Two fundamentally different things. Rick, I'm assuming you're not going to be hopping across the pond to make it to the crypto ball, but if you could, what would you tell Mr. President?
Oh man, I think a man like me has no hope of even being able to buy a ticket for such an event, right? There's no way they're letting me come in. I don't find it a massive surprise that he's holding a crypto ball. We all remember Nashville, his speech. It was, you know, heavily talking about crypto this, crypto that. I think last week we were talking about him launching Ordinals and God knows what. So yeah, Trump is definitely living right in the middle of the sort of crypto shitcoin world at the moment. So yeah, he's a crypto president rather than a Bitcoin president at the moment. That might change, right? Lots of people go through this sort of shitcoin journey before they discover that Bitcoin's the right way forward. But I don't really expect Trump to go full Bitcoin only. The reason for that is, let's just zoom out, maybe not focus so much on Trump specifically and talk more generally about the state itself. And look, the state gets most of its power from the ability to create money out of thin air, right? They're not going to be interested in a currency that removes a huge source of their power, which is, you know, the ability to create money and fund whatever they like. So the state is almost always going to posture against Bitcoin, or probably what we're seeing is more likely they figured out that they can't stop Bitcoin. So instead, they want to maybe sow a bit of confusion, right? Lump it in together with crypto is maybe one element of the tactic there. The other tactics I see are pushing these narratives that it's just an investable asset and that it shouldn't be used as money. So yeah, I don't hold my breath on any politician really, especially not in the developed nations, wanting to pursue an extremely maximalist Bitcoin strategy, because I don't think it's in the state's interest. And I think people like Nayib Bukele are an exception because they have a smaller country who is already, you know, is already having huge problems, right? They had nothing really to lose. So jumping on a Bitcoin standard makes sense to them. For the US, maybe less so, because I mean, Trump's not going to come out and suddenly declare that Bitcoin is money, because he'll kill the dollar. And I don't believe that that's what he wants to do, certainly not at any, you know, accelerated pace, because the pain from doing that would be dramatic. So again, don't expect any politicians to necessarily drag Bitcoin into or condone that you use Bitcoin as freedom money. They can't ignore it anymore. They have to address it. But you have to find your own way to Bitcoin and figure out that none of the banks, none of the hedge funds, none of the ETFs, they're not on your team with this. You need to go and approach Bitcoin on your own terms and take self-custody and all that sort of good stuff. So, hey, look, if it was up to me and if we could make it work, I'd love to buy a ticket to the crypto ball for Tony and send him in, to start smashing some heads together, right? And knocking some sense into people and say, look, Bitcoin's interesting and crypto isn't. But again, I'm not sure. I think we might struggle to get our hands on a ticket.
Yeah, I think even if Tony went there, he'd be smashing people's heads together out of frustration, not to wake people up. I can't imagine having to sit through an insufferable meal and ball with the crew that's probably going to make themselves present. So, okay, we've got JP Morgan, CEO Jamie Dimon is back at it on Bitcoin. No intrinsic value, used by sex traffickers, money launderers, ransomware. Same old tired talk track. In other words, though, here though he's implicating like BlackRock, right? I mean, he's kind of throwing a lot of these people under the bus who have jumped on board, whether you know it's proper freedom money or some proxy to Bitcoin. I find it interesting that his talk track on Bitcoin hasn't become a bit more mild and tempered, perhaps just by virtue of Wall Street beginning to, you know, make their way into this space. I don't know. Do you think this is just like habitual? I mean, he's a smart guy, so I have to feel like there's some strategy that he's you know, employing here.
Yeah, I think it's another case of turkeys not voting for Christmas. I think Jamie Dimon is maybe one of the smarter people in the legacy financial system, because I think he recognizes maybe more clearly than others that Bitcoin is maybe an existential threat to his way of, you know, doing business, because as we always preach, Bitcoin is about being your own bank. So I get that loads of banks are jumping on the bandwagon and saying they'll help you custody your Bitcoin and all that sort of thing, but that's really a last gasp at trying to remain relevant, right? So Jamie Dimon's never going to be a big fan of Bitcoin. And I think maybe he's dug so deep and he's been so anti-Bitcoin for such a long time, it's quite difficult for him to climb down from that position. But again, the question's got to be, why do we care what Jamie Dimon has to say or what he thinks? You know, he can go up there and he can bash Bitcoin all he likes. So, you know, in this, he said it's only used by money launderers and I can't remember what he said, Ponzi people and scams. You know, that's his normal rhetoric. But let's not forget that Jamie Dimon himself is a career criminal, and JP Morgan Chase. I mean, go and Google how many scandals those guys have been involved in, right? It's so hypocritical the way Jamie Dimon talks about Bitcoin. It's almost amusing. You know, we all remember Enron and, you know, World Bank and what was the other one? Bernie Madoff and all those Ponzi schemes. Well, you know, JP Morgan was right in the thick of it with all of those Ponzi's and scams. So, yeah, these people are never going to have a positive opinion about Bitcoin, and I don't think that matters. I think it's natural. It's maybe a good thing. But he's going to make himself look more and more foolish the more he digs his heels in here. And I can't wait until his ilk become completely irrelevant. They don't provide any value to society. In fact, quite the contrary, they steal value from society, right? So, yeah, I hope he keeps crying. I really, really hope he keeps crying. I'm sorry that he's upset, but it's going to continue.
So I wonder if maybe we need to take a step back here and quit assuming that he's criticizing Bitcoin. He might be making the point that, hey, we as JP Morgan can use Bitcoin to help enable sex trafficking and money laundering and do all the things that we do with more anonymity. Maybe he's just maybe he's complimenting the network and appreciates the innovation that it presents. And the fact that he says it has no intrinsic value is correct. Like, he's not wrong about that. Nothing has intrinsic value. So
well, you're absolutely right. I mean, let's not forget, I'll throw this one out for Jack Mahler's, but he had the perfect quote, which is Jamie Dimon was Jeffrey Epstein's banker. So listen, you want to listen to a guy who helps, you know, this huge child sex trafficking ring, be my guest. But I think you should maybe look elsewhere to get good advice.
Absolutely. Okay, we've got, this is an interesting thing. So I think we talked about something tangential to this a while back, but the growth of global M2 money supply since 2000 is 7.3%, and the growth of the S&P 500 since 2000 is 7.1%. Basically, the S&P 500 is the inflation rate. So if you want to keep up S&P 500, if you want to get ahead, Bitcoin. Very interesting. I think the reason people don't see this and they feel like they're getting ahead with the S&P is because assets or goods and services don't inflate one-to-one, right? And so like most people who are heavily invested in the S&P 500 own a home, for example, and their home's gone up way more than 7% in value, you know, on average since 2000. And so even though the S&P is only, you know, tracking with more broad money supply inflation, those people are getting ahead because it's not just the S&P 500 that they're invested in. What's being missed here is that the people who don't have any assets, who don't have the S&P 500 or own a home, they're renting, they're, you know, like they're getting hammered by the growth of M2. So I don't know. What are your comments on this?
Yeah, it's a clear demonstration of what a lot of Bitcoiners talk about and have been talking about for a long time. You know, inflating the money supply increases asset prices. It's quite simple. You print a load of money, it has to flow somewhere. And typically the two places it's going to go and try and hide is in things like real estate and things like stocks. And like you say, for people who are not in a position to invest and can't afford to buy a home, they're not even keeping pace with inflation, right? But there's a whole bunch of people who maybe think they're doing better than they are because the S&P 500 is, you know, giving them a 1% or 7% return. But the reality is, what's really happening here is that is not even a safe place to be. You know, some people might look at that and say, okay, I'm not into Bitcoin, but at least with the S&P 500, I can keep up with inflation and maintain my standard of living. And that's all well and good, but only if your timing is right. Because, look, they print a load of money. All of this money flows into property and it flows into stocks and bonds and things like this, right? But the problem that you have is because there's so much money printed, the way that all of this capital is allocated, often it's misallocated into things that don't make sense or things that wouldn't typically get funded because, well, you know, maybe they're a bit woke or they don't make a huge amount of sense. So the truth is, what it does is it creates a stock market full of zombie companies that only really exist because they live and thrive on this perpetual debt that we create. the challenge there is you might be trying to hide out and protect your wealth in the S&P 500. But if your timing's wrong, let's say, for example, you have a 2008 style event just at the time that you decide to take retirement, and you might have planned a certain lifestyle for yourself for the next 20 years. But if the market tanks, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have to maybe live on half of that wealth and think very carefully about what you're going to do. So yes, in the round, it will increase at 7%, but you know, you're still playing this huge gamble that the markets aren't going to absolutely hemorrhage just at the wrong time for you. Maybe you're 40, right? And you're going to work another 15 years, right? So if the market tanks, you trust the 7% average return and you just keep plugging away, you know, you don't sell the bottom and that. But look, if your retirement's heavily linked to it, you could easily get wiped out. So as the tweet mentions, the obvious answer here is Bitcoin. It's completely inflation resistant. And as adoption grows, its value is going to grow as well. So it's a really interesting angle. I really enjoyed that tweet because it paints the picture very well of what we're talking about, which is if you sit in cash, it's evaporating. Most of the money is chasing real estate and stocks. So yes, people who invest there seem to do okay unless they get hit by a, you know, serious event. Bitcoin, if you are looking for year on year great returns, Bitcoin has been undefeated for 16 years. And based on everything that we've learned and that we know about it, that looks long, you know, it's likely to continue. How many people are going to start realizing and figuring this out is another question entirely, right? We're still, whilst we live in our little Bitcoin bubble and it all makes sense to us, the vast majority of the population still think that we're completely out of our minds. So yeah, huge opportunity if you're here at this moment in time to, you know, you've figured something else out. You have information asymmetry here. You've understood that what money really is. You've understood where money comes from. And you've understood that hiding out in stocks that are just inflated bubbles through printed money is not the play. The play is to get Bitcoin and crucially keep it in self-custody, because when things start blowing up, you know, you want to make sure you're the only one holding your money, because, you know, if the stock market blows up and the dollar blows up, then if your Bitcoin's sitting with someone else, you can kiss it goodbye.
Well said. All righty. Italy's largest bank, Intesa San Paolo, I'm sure I didn't say that right, has started buying Bitcoin. Leaked emails reveal celebrations over their first transaction of 1 million for 11 BTC. Seems like they're all getting on board. So I assume they are not licensed to custody Bitcoin, but they're beginning to accumulate as a reserve, like many, many other companies. I imagine that this is just going to be a trend we continue to see. And it's going to start, like, I understand it's the largest bank in Italy, but relatively speaking, that's not JP Morgan, you know, for example, or Wells Fargo, adopting Bitcoin as a treasury asset or something like that. But it seems to be the trajectory that we're on. What's puzzling for me is not that these banks would see benefit to doing this because of its inevitability. Obviously, Bitcoin is antithetical to their profit motives, but you know, it's like their hedge, right? What's interesting to me is that I bet you there aren't a lot of Italians who read that and then say, okay, I need to figure this out, or I need to get some Bitcoin or whatever. What do you think's going on here? What do you think, at any point we see enough of this activity with these big players that we just see a brand new wave of adoption? Because to your point before, like, we're still very early. Most of the world thinks we're crazy. When do we stop being seen as crazy, I guess, is kind of what I'm curious about.
I think the worry here, Michael, is that, like, you might want to strap in for the long haul, because as much as Bitcoin adoption is likely to increase massively over the next 5 years, people are still going to call us the crazy ones, because we're the ones that advocate for the fact that you should control it yourself, that you should hold it in self-custody, that you can't trust, you know, BlackRock and buy their ETF shares because, you know, counterparty risk and telling people to get their money off the exchanges. More and more, you'll see banks offering custody options and trying to, you know, remain relevant. And through sheer convenience, people are going to go down that route. Right. It's almost like watching water flow down a mountain, it's always going to find the path of least resistance as it travels. And most people behave like that. So we can expect to see a lot of people sort of getting exposure to Bitcoin, sure, or buying Bitcoin even, but leaving it with a custodian. So I think, you and I, we're likely to spend the next several, maybe even a decade of our lives screaming into the abyss that, like, guys, don't go over the edge of the cliff. Don't follow the rest of the lemmings and end up leaving your Bitcoin in the hands of someone like Jamie Dimon. Because if you give your money to a career criminal, you will end up losing it. So I think they'll remain thinking that we're crazy. And look, the most interesting thing, or the thing I found most funny about this tweet is, look, we talk about banks getting into Bitcoin all the time, and I suppose it's not that interesting. But what I loved about it was that they were all celebrating in the leaked emails their first Bitcoin transaction. And it's kind of cute, right? Because I think we all probably have a, maybe a distant memory of our first Bitcoin transactions and how magical that felt to send money without an intermediary. It's almost a crazy sort of juxtaposition, isn't it? They're sitting inside of a financial intermediary, sending financial transactions without an intermediary and celebrating it is kind of funny. And well, here's an interesting thing. How many people working at this bank that were involved in making these transactions hasn't suddenly had a light bulb moment and gone, hang on a minute, hang on a minute, maybe I should have some Bitcoin. So yeah, we're going to see more and more and more of this sort of stuff, like more names, more companies, more banks, more custody options, good and bad, right? And we're just going to have to keep rattling that saber, maybe even louder than ever, about self-custody and taking matters into your own hands, because there's going to be an awful lot of noise coming.
Yeah, I love the idea of these banks making a Bitcoin purchase and it not being have not having to be cleared through another bank. Like they've disintermediated themselves from the transaction effectively. Like it's a beautiful thing, and I guarantee you that's completely lost on them, like how elegant the transaction was. All righty, last item. This is not really news, but an interesting question that Mr. HODL asked. He said, "Name one thing you were wrong about when it comes to Bitcoin." I'll start. "I was way too bullish." And then Pledator said, "I thought appetite for self-custody would grow after FTX, BlockFi, Celsius, et cetera. I was wrong. Nearly the whole class of 2024 has been onboarded by ETFs or MicroStrategy stock." I will give a big amen to that, because, dude, I spent an hour and a half yesterday looking for good news, and it's like MicroStrategy, Sailor, ETF inflows. It is like I'm becoming nauseous, like trying to scroll through my Twitter feed to find some good stories. And I think I was fortunate to find Bitcoin at the time of the collapse of most of those. And so I recognized pretty quickly, okay, I need to. So I moved to a collaborative custody, realized the flaws of collaborative custody, heard Tony, made sense to move to self-custody. But like that whole narrative seems to be lost on newer Bitcoiners and plenty of older Bitcoiners too, not to just critique the class of 2024. What we talk a lot about, the day that Coinbase has a hack, right? Or name your exchange, but Coinbase would be the big honeypot. What do you think it is going to take to get people into self-custody on a massive scale?
Oh, it's a great question. I feel the same as Pledator, or Plebiter. I
Was it?
don't know what it's going to take to get through to people, because, well, man, I was there buying my first Bitcoin on Mt. Gox. I feel like I've seen every single exchange hack blow up and every bit of carry on. And just like Plebiter, every time it happens, I think, okay, everyone will figure it out now. The exchange model, okay, it's good. I mean, the clue is in the name. It's an exchange, not a bank. You should use it as an exchange, not a bank. You would have thought FTX was big enough. I mean, I remember when Sam Bankman-Fried, right, he was on stages at conferences with the likes of Bill Clinton, I think, weirdly enough, and Tony Blair and some other failed war criminals. So it was a pretty big deal. It was big publicity. Do you remember how much Sam Bankman-Fried donated to, like, the Democrats and things like this? Like, it was a big, that was a big thing, a big blow up. And BlockFi and Celsius and I mean, I wrote a blog probably not that long ago where I listed out 21 exchanges that had blown up, and I had a longer, much longer list than that to choose from. And you forget them over time, but the lesson should remain. And yet, I'm as perplexed as anybody else. You've seen this time and time again, and yet people, I would imagine there's people who had their Bitcoin at Coinbase at the same time as FTX blew up and have still left it there. That must be true for quite a lot of people.
For
So
sure.
maybe they think that Coinbase has better security or it won't happen. I don't know on what grounds they think that's true. Maybe it is true. But the lesson about counterparty risk doesn't seem to be getting through to people. Even with collaborative custody, I think there's some real risks with collaborative custody because it's sort of positioned as you no longer have to worry that much about securing yourself because you have someone to rely on, someone there to help you. But here's the problem with that is you cannot avoid responsibility. It's a little bit like a boomerang, right? You can throw it away from you, but it is going to come back towards you. What I mean by that is, let's say for argument's sake, you're in a collaborative custody setup and you've got two keys and your partner has one key. Well, look, I get the whole point of them reducing the single point of failure, but you should also put yourself in a position, surely, that if your collaborative custody partner goes completely offline, so their app is no longer available, their website's not available, and you can't get hold of them, you should be in a position to restore your wallet and access to your money without them, right? That would make sense. So now let's keep following this thinking through. Well, if you're in a position where you could restore this wallet without them being involved at all, then that means you are still looking after essential data that gives you access to all your Bitcoin. So in a roundabout way, you're still practicing self-custody because you still have to look after this stuff. You have to be able to use your money without them. So it's kind of like self-custody with extra steps more than anything else. And I think my worry here is there is an increasing trend to people outsourcing looking after their Bitcoin. Maybe it's because they haven't learned from those lessons or they're new and they haven't seen it before. But I think it's actually maybe more likely that people don't trust themselves and they're a bit scared of Bitcoin and a bit put off by the technology and that sort of thing. So they, again, like we said earlier, they take the path of least resistance. They do what's easy. It's a pretty typical human thing to do. It's a crazy risk to take in my opinion, but I think people are going to keep taking it, and we just have to try and save as many people as we can from making those mistakes and taking those risks, because as you and I know, anybody can learn how to self-custody their Bitcoin properly. And I think if they go straight to that end point, which is ultimately you are going to have to take some responsibility, so just face it, take it on, learn the skills. It's not that hard. The Bitcoin way have trained people in their 80s, multiple people in their 80s, all now running nodes, comfortable with sending transactions, really secure, geographically distributed seeds. Like it's all possible. And the more you understand it, the more comfortable you'll feel. You'll also regain more privacy than you will in these other custody setups. So yeah, it's frustrating, man. And I feel the same way as Plebiter, which is how are we still here? Every year, I think every blow up, I think, right, everyone's going to learn the lesson now, but seemingly they're not going to. So, if you're in self-custody or you're taking it seriously or you're just on your journey toward that and you're learning about nodes and you're learning about how to secure things yourself, then I believe you're absolutely on the right path. It's the fastest route. You can put it off as long as you want, but you're taking on more risk. And I think eventually, either through being hacked or making a mistake, you're going to arrive at the point where you realize I need to just put in the hours and learn how to do this myself because it is the whole point of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. I think it's maybe in my mind a function of two things. So one is people forget what they have. When you get into Bitcoin, you read the Bitcoin standard, you learn like what this thing is, why it's important, so you buy some, right? And after a while, if you lose sight of the fundamentals of Bitcoin, it ceases to become freedom money in your eyes, and it becomes an investment or an asset class or categorize it how you want, but you really begin to focus on like number go up, the wealth, and you completely neglect the sovereignty that it provides, not just the financial sovereignty, but like the ability to move and do what you want and live the life that you want to lead, regardless of what the, you know, the number on the ticker is. And the second thing is, I think that if you leave your coins on Coinbase, it's really easy to open up your phone, get a quick dopamine hit, check in how much your net worth is with the Bitcoin that you have at Coinbase. I have to go into Sparrow Wallet and log in with a really long password. And, you know, then I can go see my balance. You know, like it's only on my desktop. I can't just like pick up my phone and look. And I think that's probably what a lot of people are doing, is like, they want to go see, you know, how much do I have? Is it up? Is it down? It's just like this game that they're playing in their minds. And unfortunately, it's going to be the downfall of many, many, probably prominent Bitcoiners, honestly, you know, people who we know who are going to share a story in the next couple of years, 5 years, 10 years. Oh, I lost it. You know, I shouldn't have left half of my, you know, or three quarters of my Bitcoin on Coinbase, or, you know, fill in the blank exchange. So I don't know, any other comment on that? Or
just that, I guess we just have to maintain our patience and empathy with people, right? That they're probably going to have to learn this the hard way. And that when they do, we'll be there to try and point them in the right direction. Hopefully they don't lose too much faith and give up on the whole idea and go about it the right way, right? You can ignore the responsibility as long as you want. It's going to come back to you. So just do what needs to be done. Learn how to use Bitcoin properly and separate yourself from the mob. That's what's happening here. Don't follow all the sheep into the same slaughterhouse. Go and do your own thing and you'll be better off for it.
Yeah. For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. As Rick said, don't be a sheep. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you with proper self-custody where you own the keys, no counterparty risk. Do this the right way. Take action today. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We also help with a suite of self-sovereignty services, including online privacy, privacy phones, Plan B residencies. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We'd love to chat with you. Rick, as always, thank you for the time, man. We will catch up soon.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers.